Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we are rapidly approaching Indy Live. A couple weeks, September 24, rapidly approaching the end of this program as a thing. So, Piper, fans are going to want to join us in Indy for that. VIP tickets have sold out. I'm happy to report that our block of VIP tickets that include the t-shirts are sold out, but there's still a chance to be in the room, still a chance to get a whole bunch of other swag and be a part of a really spectacular night. Piper, how do they do that?
Yeah, the easiest way to do that is to go to thehappyrant.com, hit the tab that says live show, and you can see all the details there. Tickets are $35. We'll have some giveaways from sponsors. We will have, you know, refreshments per usual. We will do three live episodes, including one that is entirely interaction with our attendees, which are our favorite shows to do. It'll be the evening of September 24th, 7 p.m. until whenever the fun ends. I don't really know that we need to put a stop date on this unless the church, you know, kicks us out. But, you know, we have a good partnership with them, so I don't think they'll do that. And it should be a great time. And then you can drag your tired, well-laughed behinds over to the Gospel Coalition the next day and, you know,
get where you will not be laughing for 3 days.
You won't laugh at all, but there will probably be some, you know, good theological stuff going on over there.
That's right. That's right. Shout out to those guys. They do a nice job. But we will do a nice job. We'll do it in Indianapolis at Soma Church and Day Spa in Broad Ripple. And we couldn't be more excited for this. And boys, while we're promoing, we should tell people where they can hear us after the Happy Rant wraps. They can catch me on two podcasts. One is called Kluck, and the other is called the Gut Check Podcast. Big R, they can catch you on your new old thing with at Jared C. Correct? Is that live yet? Is it back up and subscribed?
No, not back up yet. But it's going to be our initial. Season's going to be recorded, I believe, sometime in the fall. So probably look to the new year. And then I have an as yet talked about podcast. It's also going to come out sometime around the new year as well. So
All right. Pipe, you got anything to promo?
I will be working with some of the folks from our church on a podcast called The Sidebar. It's one that we do that's sort of additional teaching and kind of highlighting ministry stuff going on over there. So the Emmanuel Sidebar podcast. So probably some of that throughout later in the fall and into the new year. And then actually just started conversations with, there's a small Christian radio network that I've been working with their staff and their team for a couple years now. And potentially launching some podcasts with them in the new year, but it is in the early stages of planning. Mm-hmm. So doesn't have a name, doesn't have a total framework, but it's going to be, you know, like shorter 8-episode season kind of things is the plan.
There you go.
And so, listeners, keep an eye out on social media feeds and whatever on stuff coming. And what is next year? 2024? Is that right?
Jeez, yeah.
I've barely gotten used to 2023 existing. So coming in 2024.
Well, and we know how lucrative that can be based on the experience that we're having right now. And speaking of that, we need to go to an ad break. On the other side of it, we're going to talk about career and life transition advice for college grads. So in addition to coming to Indy Live and subscribing to all of our podcasts, what other life advice can we give them? We'll get to that right after this quick break.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Scott. As a servant of God, wife, and mother of four, I understand the juggle of multiple roles and stages. That's why I created the Encourager podcast, to help guide us through the messy middle stage of life. Join me on the Encourager as we challenge the chaos and embrace harmony. Together, we'll create practical systems to balance your roles and fulfill priorities. And we will do it while having joy and energy for both home and work life. Tune in for inspiring stories and interviews, actionable tips, and methods to do both home and work life. Because here, we believe you can do all things, just not all at once.
Okay, boys, we're back. Career and life transition advice for college grads. This is apropos, sorry, I didn't silence my phone, and that's my college student calling me right now, so I'm going to silence that. I'll text him and tell him I'm on the radio. Pipe, what career and life advice do you have for college grads?
Yeah, this came to mind because I feel like four or five times in the last week, I've had either conversations with or about guys who graduated in May and are just trying to figure out what's next, or have moved into a career and are completely kind of at a loss because they moved from the college bubble of living with all their friends and kind of having everything built in for them to, you know, living in an apartment by themselves and being an engineer or whatever. And what the thing that comes to mind in all these conversations is that they feel the distinct pressure to be a fully formed career person and adult like 6 months out of college or 4 months out of college. So the thing that I wish I could relay this to them is take a deep breath. Whatever you're doing right now is very unlikely to be the thing you're doing when you're 28 or 38 or 48. Right. So if you just sort of handle it well, you know, just learn some responsibility and then you'll probably switch jobs. You don't even have to like this job. Just do it well. And then you'll move on at some point and you'll be okay.
Right. Yeah, no, that's good. And I think to your point, I see that too on my end. So I'm a college professor. If you're new to the program, I'm sorry, we're about to be done with the whole thing. But
there are like 460 episodes you can go back and listen to if you're,
that is
if
true.
You're sort of insane.
Something to do. I think college students now, there's two things going on that I see. One, you know, we do our level best to prepare them, especially in my department, in our school, to go and have job skills that they can trade in marketplaces that actually exist. So I think we do a good job of preparing them for that. But the kind of emotional journey of leaving college and leaving, you know, this kind of cloistered environment where everything's sort of delivered to you on a platter, you know, right down to, you know, three hots and a cot, you know, you've got a place to sleep, you've got, you know, all the food you can handle and all the activities kind of delivered up to you, you know, then we release them into this world where it's like, hey, congrats on your first job. You have 5 paid days off for the year, you know, and you have to be in at 8 a.m. and it's a shock to them. And, you know, naturally they hate it. And I think we do a pretty bad job of preparing them for that. And add to that the fact that I think this generation, they expect a lot more than we did, you know, and we've talked about this dynamic before. It was kind of exciting to move out and graduate from college and go get a grimy apartment and just grind it out for a few years. But I think this generation, you know, they want to graduate, get the high paying job, get the house in the suburbs, you know, buy a couple rental properties and become a Christian slumlord. Like, they want all the stuff their parents have just immediately. And it really doesn't work that way. And there's more that I could say about the emotional side of it, but Big R, what kind of advice or what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, gosh, the first thing that came to mind, was probably just, you know, courage, I think. Don't you're going to have, it's, life is hard.
Yeah.
And you're stepping out into the vast unknown like we all do, but don't let the fear of what you can't know prevent you from taking like really good, courageous steps forward. Try some things, you know, I mean, God is sovereign to the point where if you make a right turn that should have been a left turn, he'll use that right turn to eventually turn you left up the road somewhere, you know, to get you to where you need to go. So again, it's not just trusting the process. And it's certainly not even trusting in yourself. It's just, so if you are a person of faith and be a person of courage too, and just take some good steps and be okay with stumbling, like Piper said, finding your way, making some ridiculous decisions, because it's all part of how you're going to gain wisdom to make the right decisions, later in life when you have the opportunity. So I think courage is a big one, because there can be that sense of like, man, I'm so afraid of making the wrong move, making a mistake, doing something that I can't walk back from. And it's like, man, that's probably highly unlikely at 22 years old, you know, unless you commit a crime. I think you'll be okay. You know?
Yeah. That's a really good word. And, you know, there's a lot that's encompassed in courage, you know, and getting up, like dragging yourself out of bed to go to a job that you've realized you don't like, you know, there's some courage in that, or, you know, dealing with different kinds of coworkers or dealing with some circumstance that hasn't gone your way in a relationship or whatever. And, you know, all of those kind of fall under that umbrella of courage. And I think by way of advice, you know, throw yourself into the life of the local church. You know, there's kind of this feeling of, you know, among some college students or just some people that God has the perfect thing for me somewhere. And, you know, if I can just figure out what city I'm supposed to be in or what job I'm supposed to take. And I think by and large, it doesn't matter. You know, the more I've kind of wandered through these things myself / seen other people wander through them, you know, I think the Lord really wants me tenderhearted and repenting a lot and enjoying fellowship with, you know, believers in the body wherever I'm at. And I could do that, you know, almost anywhere. So
that's a good word, man.
Just go, just be a part of it and enjoy the local church, serve eventually, but you don't have to like start a ministry or run something immediately. Like just go and be fed by it. And I love it when people do that in our church. Yeah.
I completely agree with what you just said, but it reminds me of a conversation I actually had yesterday with the guy. He's 20, you know, he's 22, 23, recently graduated from college, you know, working full time and sort of just an entry level job somewhere. So he's not overly enthusiastic about his career and feels very, very drawn to vocational ministry. Mm-hmm. And he seems to be approaching it wisely, because he looks around and he says, I see a lot of other guys in their early 20s trying to jump into the pastorate. He said, I wouldn't want to be pastored by me. So maybe that's not the right route. What is the right route? Mm-hmm. But what I caught in talking to him, so he doesn't go to our church. He goes to a different church, real involved. You know, he's helping lead a young adult small group and volunteering and just, like you said, just involved in the life of the church.
Yeah.
But there's this sense of... And maybe this is, I don't know if it's particular to this generation or just particular to youth. I think it might just be particular to youth, because I think I was the same way. A sense of, there's not a sense of sort of doing the necessary thing right now to earn the right to, you know, be called as an elder, for example, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I told him, I said, look, if you faithfully do this for 10 years... I said, in 10 years' time, you might be an elder and you'll still be young.
Yeah.
You know, like you will be 32 years old.
Right.
And who has somebody who has served in a church for 10 years, you know, you got 10 years of experience and 10 years of faithfulness and 10 years of reputation. And so there's that sense of like, I have to arrive right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's true in careers too. You know, you talked about this generation wanting to sort of have what their parents have. I remember wanting those same things and resenting the like $13 an hour full-time job, which again, in 2005, $13 an hour was a lot better than it is now. But
Right.
I mean, but it was barely livable, you know, yeah. It was basically just above poverty wages.
Sure.
And kind of resenting the fact that you have to start at the bottom somewhere.
Yeah. Pipe, yeah. That's a good point. That makes me think of, you know, I remember being that age, and I think another word, a good word for, in terms of encouragement and advice, is just patience. But I remember, I don't know if you guys felt this way. I remember feeling, I'm not even trying to be funny right now, but I remember I was 23 and I remember feeling incredibly old. Mm. And I remember thinking, you know, that college, you know, sort of that college window is over. Man, high school is 5 years in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, at that age, a year is a long time. You know, at our age, mm-hmm. a year goes by in about a week and a half now. But at that age, you're still kind of running off of that youthful experience with age, where is that, you know, it tends to go slower because of how much hope you still have and how many things you're still anticipating to happen, mm-hmm. which makes time kind of slow down. And so I remember 23 just thinking like, oh my gosh, you know, what do I have to show for the last 5 years? I'm way out of high school. I see all of my friends are moving on in specific ways that I wish I was moving on in, or, you know, I'm jealous of my friend's career. I'm jealous of my friend's relationship that they have. And there was just like this impatience to want to get to a place that God had not brought me to yet.
Right.
And, and I think, that's something we can say to somebody, but that's something that they're going to have to work out and experience, because I think that's a real thing for that age.
No, that's really good. And let's take a break. And then on the other side of it, I want to say a couple things about that. We'll be right back. Yeah, that's really good, baby. And I think I relate to you on the idea of, like, I remember in my early 20s just feeling really old. Like, mm-hmm. I'm ready for adulthood. You know, I'm ready for this. But at the same time, I was so, like, spiritually immature that I had no concept of, if I'm just patient and faithful, God will bring me the right things. Mm-hmm. Which he totally did. But in my own mind, I had my own, like, clock as to how things should be happening. And I just remember, like, really maniacally trying to make things happen. You know, mm-hmm. and some of that's good, right? Some of that's motivation. But at the end of the day, I probably should have, you know, been more interested in faithfully waiting on the Lord and, yeah, working hard, pushing myself, trying to get better. But, you know, not having this maniacal sense of, oh my gosh, I'm 23. Like, where's my book deal? You know, and like just being a little bit more patient. Nobody really taught me patience. So I think there are some spiritual lessons, how to grieve well, how to be patient, that, you know, we would do well as older guys now and as parents to teach those things to the generation that's coming up, you know?
And I think if we're going to do that well, so people tried to teach me patience, and there was two problems with that. One is I wasn't about to hear it. That's my own youthful arrogance. And the second was they did a bad job, because basically patience was wait your turn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait your turn implies that I'm ready right now, but there's other people in front of me in line.
Yeah.
And so, well, why can't I just jump in front of them if I think I'm smarter than they are, or I think I'm better than they are, which I absolutely did.
Yeah. And
as opposed to patience being, you're not ready yet. Yeah. Like, well, somebody needs to look a 23-year-old in the face and go, you're not there yet. That doesn't mean you can't get there. It doesn't mean you don't have all the raw materials to be great at, you know, whether that's professional or creative or in ministry or whatever. But there are things that need to happen over time, and that can only happen over time. Like, you can't earn maturity. You have to grow into it. And so that's not a thing that any 23-year-old wants to hear. But if it's said well, then it's not an insult. And it's not a wait your turn, because there's older people in front of you. This isn't really about age. It's about readiness.
Okay. Go ahead, baby. Go ahead.
Well, I want you to hit your point, T, but I was thinking as a way, and we can do this after your point, but just as a way to shift this into, you know, I can tell you sort of the way that my parents responded to my early adulthood and how they encouraged me, how they didn't encourage me, like the things that they did, things that they encouraged me in, the things that they neglected to encourage me. And again, not to bash them or anything. They didn't, you know, they didn't do the worst job, but I think a lot of this too is it's really based on how your parents are, you know, kind of training you and preparing you for that time. Yeah. And I mean, that's going to, I mean, that is going to deeply influence how you approach these things for sure. So I think that could be a fun next part of the convo.
Oh, for sure. And that actually dovetails perfectly with what I wanted to say, which is I agree with everything that Pipe said, but like from the perspective of being in the college business in 2023, we almost can't say those things, right? Because the kind of students we're getting, nobody's saying it to them. In the sense that, you know, college is so much now about customer service. You can't really say to anybody, you're not ready yet. You know what I mean? Because it's all about, oh my gosh, you are ready. You're so fabulous. You know, and like these kids have been, their experiences have been really curated, you know, and it's like, what do you mean I'm not ready for a job at 19? I learned the cello when I was 4 and I, you know, took my first missions trip when I was 11 and I clept out of college algebra at age 12. And like these kids think they're amazing because they've kind of been trained to think that they're amazing. And look, I mean, they're all created in God's image and we want great things for them, but there's something about being on this side of it where you just go, fundamentally, you're not ready for the job market at age 19, despite having graduated college at age 19 or whatever,
Is there a way to tell them by telling them what's coming? So rather than you saying you're not ready, going, here's what you're going to find. You're going to go out there and think that you are like you're just the absolute best person in the world. And you're going to get turned down for 18 jobs. You're going to get started as like a barely paid intern or whatever those things are.
Yeah.
And the problem is, I mean, I guess you can tell them that and they're just going to be like, well, that's unfair. Yeah. Well, actually that's remarkably fair. It's like the definition of fair, but can you tell them what's coming with a sense of like, so prepare yourself to absorb this. Rather than you saying, you're not ready, I would start you as an intern.
Well, that's a great question. And you guys can speak to this too as men of the cloth. But I think, Pipe, there's a great deal of discipleship in that moment. In the sense that by God's grace and Lord willing, you know, by the time they come to the end of their college journey or close to it with me, we've developed such a friendship or trust level that I can say some of those things. And say, yeah, just look, I know this is what you want, but this might be what you encounter, you know? And if you do encounter that, don't let it be devastating. Don't let it be a referendum on the rest of your career. Like, brighter days are ahead. And some of the coolest conversations I get to have are with my former students who are in, like, year one or year two of their jobs and are like, oh my gosh, Cluck, this is not what I hoped it would be. And I'm like, that's okay. Like, you're just having the experience that literally everyone else has had, you know? And I think so much of the parent experience in Christendom in 2023 is this really interesting, like, wish fulfillment exercise where mom and dad, and you guys know this because you've been parents and I have too, you completely have rose-colored glasses on when it comes to your kid. You're like, my kid is special. He's going to do something amazing, you know? And so we have all these industries that are catering to parents feeling that way. And all these little, like, I don't know, teen-packed leadership schools that create these little arrogant monsters, you know? But that's all, like, fan service for the parents, you know? And so as a result, nobody's really seeing the playing field for what it actually is. And I think that's a problem, you know, and I think parents need to be the first wave of, hey, of course, we're going to shoot for our dreams and dream big and go for stuff. But, you know, it's tough out there and you're going to experience people's sin natures and the world at a deep level. And, you know, we'll walk through it together. That kind of discipleship thing, you know?
Yeah, it's good, man.
Yeah. Boys, let's take a break. And then, yeah, on the other side of it, we'll wrap by what you set up, Big R, talking about how our parents kind of tried to prepare us for it. We'll do that after this quick break. All right, boys, we're back. Baby, you had mentioned some things that your folks, you know, did for you or didn't do for you. Talk about that some more.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've thought a lot about this over the years, just based on my own experience and then, you know, kind of learning the experience of others. But, you know, my parents were very, they were very hands off, you know, when it came to, hey, Ronnie, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? And my dad was one of these old school guys that was, you know, deathly afraid of forcing me to do something and being kind of a push dad and kind of putting me in a situation that I didn't really want to be in. So I think what he did was he went too far the other way. And so that produced a certain something in me that produced sort of an outsized ambition to probably get his approval on one level and, you know, work too hard in a bunch of different areas so that I could succeed because I just wasn't given direction. Like I, you know, it's interesting for me to think about, and this is true, this is not an exaggeration, but there was my parents at no point ever sat down with me and said, hey, let's talk about what you want to do in your life and figure out some steps and how you might want to get there. Like that was literally never a conversation that ever happened. It was just, you need to figure out what you want to do. And I don't know, go do it kind of a thing. It was, so it was kind of like, so in some ways, you know, relating this to ministry, I've served with guys that are very micromanagey, right? They're just into everything you're doing and you feel just suffocated. I've also worked with what I call macro managers, where guys, they're so distant. And on one hand, they think, hey, but I'm giving you all this space.
Yeah.
And man, I'm not suffocating you. You have freedom to do what you want. But that also creates a dynamic where it's like, but I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. I don't know if you're happy. And I got to hear from you a little bit more than that because I'm paranoid and I might be going down a path that isn't great. But I just don't know because you're not helping me sort of see the light through some of these things. And that was definitely the case with my parents, but it has deeply affected literally my entire life in the way that I approach things and in the way that I need a particular level of affirmation from people or I'm working towards that affirmation. And so it's been a whole thing that I've had to process and I've even worked out some of it in counseling. So it's been a deep thing when you're trying to figure out what to do at that age and you don't really feel like you have somebody that is literally taking enough interest to say, hey, well, let's talk about it. Let's figure it out. You know?
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of my story right there with that.
Yeah. No, that's good. And I relate to a lot of that. And I don't know, Pipe, if it's generational, like, I don't know if our parents' generation just didn't, if there was nobody telling them to have those talks with us. But yeah, I would say my experience was pretty similar, like right down to, I've got to get the approval, like whatever I have to do to get it, I'm doing it. And, like really similar. And I don't remember, I mean, I remember having talks with my parents about like where I should go to college or whatever. But there wasn't a lot of talk about what I should do. You know, the message was very much like, you know, get a secure job so you can provide, you know, and like get something stable. And you know, on one hand, that
freelance
was really...
Freelance writer it is.
Yeah, freelance writer it is. Hold my coffee while I go do the most unwise thing imaginable. But yeah, no, that was hard for them. You know, it was really hard for them. And I get it. I understand why. Pipe, what kind of approach did your folks take toward the whole thing?
Man, it in some ways really similar to y'all. And I think it is a generational thing, but they approached it much more... theologically, great surprise to everyone I know. Like my dad and my mom were only interested, as far as I can tell, in character. Mm-hmm. Was I a good Christian? Would I grow up into a good Christian man?
Sure.
I don't remember having any conversations with them about career direction. And I'm not initiated by me or them. Like that's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. I did not see them as the ones to go to about this. Cause like in my mind, my mom, you know, I forgot that my mom had worked quite a few jobs before moving home to raise a bunch of kids. And then my dad, like, my dad's a pastor. That's not a professional in my mind. At least it wasn't as a kid. I'm like, he thinks all the time. That's his job.
Right.
And then talks on Sundays. And so I just, like, it never crossed my mind to ask them professional advice.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, strengths and weaknesses to this, because they were very formative for me in terms of priorities, character priorities, which ultimately are more important than how you make your money.
Yeah.
But also I didn't have any idea how to make money or what to do. But they also taught, I mean, in the midst of all that, part of character was being responsible, doing what's put in front of you. So like I learned a work ethic quickly. So I was able to make my way in the world simply by going, well, this is the job that I have to do. I'm going to be good at it. But I was probably, I mean, I was well into my 20s, close to 30 before I wrapped my head around some of the basic concepts of just sort of what are the things that I love to do and what are the things that I have aptitude for and where do they intersect? You know, just those sort of things that are you. I mean, I'm trying to have those conversations with my daughters now. One of them's a senior in high school, not to make career decisions, but just to inform. Well, what do you want to study? Mm-hmm. What might you be interested in? You know, and my daughter's a people person more than she is like a mathematical mind or something like that. And so that's a little bit trickier because people skills work in all jobs, but they don't actually point you to a particular job.
Yeah.
So it's, I had some really helpful formative pieces and then some massive gaps in terms of basic direction. And so I kind of just had to figure it out by myself. And a lot of it was just sort of like, well, what's interesting to me? Can I make money in that? And so I was like, well, I like books.
Yeah.
And I have a college degree. And so I went into publishing for a long time.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and it was only several years into that, maybe probably 8 years into that, that I started to realize, oh, there are things that I really enjoy that I'm good at, that I'm drawn to, that this job doesn't actually provide. And that was sort of the tipping point for me to probably where the Lord started to move me towards a place of, that's when I started publishing, that's when I started speaking more, and eventually moved into ministry. But that was, you know, there's a several year runway.
Yeah. Don't you think that in all of this, there's an undercurrent of, I don't know, at 21, 22, 23, you're just at a very deep level, not who you're going to be. You know what I mean? Like at 21, I didn't know enough about myself to know what I actually wanted. Yep. You know, like writing was it was kind of a thing on the horizon that I knew I wanted it in my life at some level, but I didn't know what that was going to look like from a job standpoint. And in fact, I really needed to try a bunch of different things to kind of start to triage what I didn't want. You know what I mean? And start to take inventory of, all right, what are the gifts that the Lord's actually given me, and how can I maybe use those to provide for my family or like serve the Lord, you know, which it took me a shamefully long time to begin to think about that. But those are thoughts that you start to have, you know, after you get down the road a little bit, you know, and after you become who you're going to be. And I mean, in the case of young men, like physiologically, we're not who we're going to be. Like our brains mentally, are not what they're going to become, you know, and it's a good thing, right? So, yeah, there's a reason employers aren't giving us the keys to, I don't know, important things at 21.
To what you're saying, Ted, even the question, you know, I pose the question like sort of what are you good at and what do you enjoy?
Mm-hmm.
Those questions need to be asked, but also held really loosely at 22. Yeah. Yeah. What are you good at? You're going to be really self-delusional. So you're going to think you're good at stuff you're not. And B, you don't have enough experiences to know if you will be good at something, you know? So you might think you're a great writer when in fact you're not, but what you don't realize is you actually have a real skill talking with people, listening to people. Yeah. So maybe counseling, maybe journalism, maybe, you know, something in the sales field where it's a human thing, but you haven't done any of those things. Yeah. So you don't actually have any idea. You don't have the maturity to even pay attention to other people. So there really is an aspect of surveying the field, but you have to be far enough down the road to have interacted with a field, professional field, a ministerial field, just a broader variety of people outside of your college experience. If all you know are professors and college students, your experience is really limited. And so you have to get out in the field and go, oh, I didn't even know that like corporate law existed. I didn't know that was a thing. Maybe that's the thing I'm interested in. I didn't know that medical sales was a thing or whatever. Like just the whole fields that why would they have ever crossed your radar?
Well, and I think you're hitting on something really important. Aspirationally, a college curriculum should reveal some of those things, right? So if you come study journalism at Union with me, for example, you know, we're going to make a whole bunch of product together, which is really fun. There's going to be a whole bunch of joy in it. You're going to get all these reps to sort of try it on, you know, and at the end you might go, I'm really good at writing features, but I hate writing news, or I'm really not a great writer at all, but I love doing podcasts or whatever. And you're going to come to the end with this menu of things that you're able to self-scout thyself on, you know, and you're able to kind of self-evaluate, what am I good at? What brings me joy in this, you know, and what just feels like a grind? And then hopefully it gets you gradations closer to picking a career. But I think one of the dangers in academia or higher ed or just even some of these experiences that kids can, you know, sign up for and pay for is that they're so kind of customer service oriented that you never get anyone shooting straight with you about what it is that you maybe can or can't do. And I think that's where it gets dangerous.
Yeah, I think the last piece of it, and we've talked about this over and over again in various aspects on this show, is most careers that people end up in are not what they aspired to do.
Yeah,
you know,
very true.
Like if you end up working in accounting at a large health insurance firm, you probably can take care of a family, buy a home. Like, it's a good job.
Oh, yeah.
And utterly unexciting to a 22-year-old.
You didn't dream about that as a kid.
Yeah, you just showing up to the office with your lanyard and your blue button down and whatever, like, that's not your dream. But it's a good job that you can do good work in alongside people who you can have meaningful relationships with and so forth. So there's just a fair amount of, like, not getting the aspirations knocked off of you, but just realizing sort of human limitations of I can only do one thing at a time. And so I just have to be faithful at the thing that is in front of me. And if that is accounting at a health insurance firm, cool. If it's, you know, if it's making music, cool. But, you know, with everyone, each one of those things provides different opportunities, different stabilities, et cetera. But just the realization that you probably have to put aspirations to rest at some point and make the most of what you have been given.
Yeah, that's good. Baby, anything more to add?
Oh man, I think we said it. I think we should, let's put a bow on Pipe's last sentence there.
I love it. Yeah. Let's do that. Let's say that we've done what we always do, boys, and that we've wandered to and fro throughout this topic. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
The love of God is immeasurable. It's unchanging. It's indescribable. Because God loves you so much, you can sleep through the night in peace. With Abide Bible Sleep Meditation, you can fall asleep fast with relaxing sleep stories based on Scripture. To start listening now, go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Bible Sleep Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.